So the last thing I'd like to do is show you these slides and we'll talk about it. Basically, we just had a survey done of, and here are the other faculty, incidentally. It was a random sample national survey of general medical oncologists. I'll just show you. Here's where we found these people. Here are the states. We had seven docs from New York. These are all general medical oncologists who take care of all four of these cancers and more. I thought this was kind of interesting how we have to kind of cross-reference this to where they live, but that was what I was finding out as I've been talking to people across the country is that even this doc in a small town in Indiana, they're using PPE, they're doing the whole visitor thing. They even went through a period of time when their resources, you know, their elective surgeries, like in the middle of Indiana, that there aren't too many people who have not been affected, and I guess quite a few significantly affected right now. I'll just show you some of these, and I'm going to ask you for some of your comments. You can see the majority places, virtually all have some kind of visitor restriction. Telemedicine has skyrocketed, as you can imagine. They weren't using it hardly before. Now 93% are using it. This is, again, it's a broad spectrum across the country of what a typical week looks like. So it looks like less than about half of the patient encounters are live, but quite a few of the others are now virtual. And I can see also the same for you. Oh yeah, again, in terms of the basic stuff, it's pretty much going on everywhere, not only for the patients, but as well as the staff. Any comments on what I've shown you up to now?
Yeah, it looks pretty consistent. I mean, I think, you know, if you had done this program a few months ago, you would have seen a much different story, right? I think what's really sad but true is that in the South and in the West, the surge in cases has really redefined how oncologists can give their care. I think what we noticed up here is that cancer patients, because we were doing testing, actually had low rates of positivity. They're not the ones going out to the bars, you know, it could be their grandchildren or their children. And I think what we don't know yet and why we have to continue with these PPE measures, like who comes with somebody to a cancer visit? It's their child sometimes interpreting for them or helping them. And if that 25-year-old kid went out to a party the night before, they will track in the virus. And we're trying really hard not to let that happen. So I think what's remarkable about the slides you showed there, Neil, is how consistent we all are, whether I'm in New York or whether you're talking to somebody in the Midwest or in the South. And that's because I think the impact, at least on the oncology level, is everywhere. And I think they're doing the right thing by being protective of their patients.
So you won't be surprised to see that enrollment on clinical trials is dramatically decreased, at least the way they're reporting it. Also, a substantial number of physicians are in situations where surgery and radiation therapy was not as accessible as it usually is. Of course, I know in your case, I think it was maybe almost completely shut down. How did you prioritize the essential therapies for both surgery and radiation and chemo for that matter?
What's interesting, you know, I think the definition of elective surgery is all relative. I showed you the case where the patient couldn't get access to a biopsy, which is really critical to knowing whether he had metastatic renal cancer or not. One interesting thing that did happen is you can see that my answer with regard to surgery is similar to the majority, but the radiation was slightly different. And I think what happened was there was definitely less radiation happening, but there was a shift. In the midst of the pandemic, there was more radiation happening than surgery. And one of the reasons was they couldn't do the surgery. Like they turned some of the ORs into ICU spaces. And so instead, really what was happening was some patients were getting, let's say, SBRT to an impending mass as an alternative to neurosurgery, for example, let's say with cord compression. And if you couldn't wait, you couldn't wait, but instead of doing what you might have otherwise done in the past, like surgery, you might have done radiation.
We were also asking whether or not people were avoiding any particular type of therapy and didn't see very much of it. One question I regret not asking because it kind of didn't come on my radar until after we did the survey was the question of how much people are trying to avoid neutropenia in patients with chemotherapy, either to try to prevent people from getting the disease or getting neutropenic fever and have to go into the hospital, or maybe complications of COVID. Are they more conservative with dosing? Any comments on neutropenia?
Well, I mean, when you look at some of the early studies, the mortality with COVID-19 in cancer patients was sky high, you know, like 50, 60, 70% mortality in some of the early studies from China. I think some of that might have overstated what was happening in real life. And I do think neutropenia is a very bad thing to have if you also get infected. So I wouldn't be surprised if people were dose attenuating some of their chemo or using growth factors in situations they might not have. I was doing some of that. Like a patient that I normally might just give docetaxel to, I might have given him docetaxel plus G-CSF just as a way of avoiding this, you know, and also not just using G-CSF, but using the patch so they don't have to come back in and get the shot, you know, the release that gives the injection a day later. So I think people probably did make some of these choices, but I'm not surprised that they didn't stop the chemo if they thought that the patient needed the chemo.
You know, given the immune issues that seem to be part of this COVID syndrome, particularly in terms of ARDS, we are curious what people thought about immunotherapy. And I guess for the people who thought they knew the answer, most of them thought that immunotherapy doesn't increase the risk of getting it or having problems from it. But you put down, I don't know, which I'm sure everybody really believes, but any hints in that direction, any concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know is my fairest answer because there's some data on both sides of this, and it's not great data. As you know, a lot of the studies here are still pretty lousy. But I think if you looked at the way I use COVID in terms of changing the way I treat GU patients, I mostly favored IO therapy over chemotherapy. So with regard to this, I do think that the answer is more likely to be no than yes, that it's not likely to make as big a difference as something like chemo. But it doesn't mean it doesn't make a difference. Just, you know, you're picking between two evils. Well, I shouldn't say evils. They're great for the cancer, but two risks in the setting of an unprecedented situation. And deep down, I'm not sure I know. I can tell you some of our patients were certainly getting treated through the pandemic with IO therapy. We didn't see serious complications, but it's a very small N. As I mentioned, the consortium that looked at this, the CCC19 consortium that grouped together a bunch of cancer centers, we participated in that, and they did not seem to see a negative impact of COVID on the use of checkpoint inhibitors. So I think probably no is the safer answer here.